Around the NFL Podcast. Can't stop eating baked goods.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Ho! Tuesday show. It's packed.
Oh, what a show.
Don't get where some of the tags come from. Is that something that I've missed along the way, that someone here is obsessed with baked goods and cannot stop eating them? I don't remember that narrative.
Usually when you reference food, it will be something about meat, like you're eating pig liver or something. You don't usually move into the baking realm when you're making your food takes. And I don't remember making any comments myself. So yeah, that was a mystery to me too.
I don't either, but I do wonder, as a fooditarian, Mark, famously just, you know, don't like food. How has it been, you know, in lockdown, you know, coronavirus time as a fooditarian?
Well, I mean, I think we all had our period where you were just eating way too much takeout. And as parents, I fall victim of eating what the kids eat too often, which is unpleasant. But I have developed a love for ramen noodle, which I don't think I had, you know, in my system previous. But
takeout or like the 30-cent things from the groceries?
Well, a little bit of both. Takeout I've had some delicious takeout ramen. But since we moved to Hawthorne, California, home of the Beach Boys, I've been using more of the cook it yourself versions, which are just delightful. And they're easy to make. I can make those without directions.
You know what I would love? I would love, Mark, for you, you know, Mike Lowe from the Beach Boys, the one that's that no one likes.
Sure.
For you to just start wearing the Beach Boys baseball cap that Mike Lowe wears at all time to cover up his bald spot.
I think you mean Mike Love, because
Mike Love. Yeah.
His nephew was on the Cavaliers, or is on the Cavaliers for a while there. Yeah,
Kevin Love is his nephew?
Kevin is his nephew, yeah. Mike Love, though, is notoriously, he had some reasons to be annoyed with one of the Beach Boys who passed away. I don't think we need to get to it on this show, but there were some stuff that I would see as it would end some friendships if someone did the same. Let's put it that way.
Okay. See, that's good. You have both sides now covered of the Beach Boys controversy here on the Around the NFL Podcast.
Sure. Breaking news.
Very busy show. You mentioned your children. My family left for Texas this morning, so the house is silent and weird. I don't like it. 2 weeks.
Wow.
And I'm not.
You like it a little bit.
I'll like it probably for 2 days, but I don't know. It's just not my thing. So it's very quiet and weird here. So it's good to have company with you gentlemen and all of our listeners across the world as we dig into the final game of week 9, the first game of week 10. And we have a guest this week. You know, you might have remembered our Wheel of Teams series that was very divisive amongst the fan base. People upset that they thought the Wheel of Teams was rigged. It wasn't. We're not bringing back the wheel, but we wanted to focus in on one team now. Once we're in the season, it will be the Philadelphia Eagles. And to do that, we are going to speak with Bo Wolf of The Athletic. So we're excited to do that. So let us get this show rolling. And yes, start with what went down Monday night at the Meadowlands.
Jets have a timeout left if they want it. Folk on the way. And it is good. With zeros on the clock, Nick Folk, the field goal from 51 yards away, and that's how the Jets fall to 0-9. And the Patriots fight on for another day.
That's Steve Levy, who, by the way, was just on the Rich Cimini of ESPN.com Flight Deck podcast. He's a Jets fan, so that might have been a tough call for him. Yes, Nick Folk, the ex-Jet, hits the 51-yarder, lifting the Patriots to a 30-27 win over Gangrene. The Pats wiped out a 10-point fourth-quarter deficit in this game to, really, let's be honest, save their season potentially here. They lose to the Jets on Monday night with the Ravens coming up in a week. They're done, potentially, 2-6 with 2-7 on the way. But they saved their own bacon, Greg Rosenthal, and they did it because they dominated the fourth quarter in a way you don't typically see in our league.
Yeah, you got to take what you can get, you know, as a fan or just as a person in the year 2020. I think this is going to go down as the high point of the Patriots season, which sounds funny. Like, there's a way you could look at this as like it's sad how far they've fallen, that they got to come back from 10. Or you could just like enjoy the moment that they got to come back. It was fun. The offense and Cam Newton made plays, and that's it. You know, sometimes NFL seasons, like if you're a fan, you're hoping for a destination, right? The Patriots have no destination. You know, I think in a best case scenario, they're winning 6 or 7 games. I think they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. They're definitely one of the worst defenses in the NFL, and I don't think that changes. So you got to like take what you can get and have some fun along the way. They might have a couple fun wins like this. You do not want to lose to the Jets. That would have been embarrassing, I think, for Bill Belichick and everyone else, considering where the Jets were at. But there, it's not like something you come out of and you think, okay, let's get it going. Let's save our season. Like, they're cooked. There's no coming back from the lack of talent that they have in the front seven of their defense.
I think if you're a Jets fan, this was, and this is my take, Dan, you may have a different one on the Jets, but the best possible outcome, because they were competitive. And this was their first real look to have Jamison Crowder, Rashad Perriman, and Denzel Mims, who we're starting to see moments from Denzel Mims that give you hope. They hadn't been on the field together all season. And I know it's Joe Flacco, but Flacco played like the Flacco of old. I mean, he can't move and stuff, but he found big plays against the secondary. The Patriots have no pass rush. I mean, but you cannot come out of this thing with a win. And I know that it's different for the players and the coaches, but the Jets right now have the Chargers, the Dolphins, the Raiders, the Seahawks, the Rams, the Browns, and the Patriots again. If you get through that with the number one pick, you're looking at a front office with a bevy of other selections. You will go get the best quarterback available with a new coaching staff. The era of, you know, laughingstock scenarios for the Jets would end quickly. And so had they won last night, and you know,
that's what they thought when they drafted Sam Darnold too.
Well, but he's been put in a terrible situation. I think you'd start to see the team hopefully take a bit of a turn with a better general manager, more selections. And, you know, Trevor Lawrence grades higher than any of these quarterbacks that have come through the system in the last 5 or 6 years. So bigger picture, I mean, it would be nice to not, you know, go 0-16, but you don't want to fall out of that number one position.
I mean, yes, I was told that repeatedly on Twitter by people that are texting me. Don't let your team win. Keep losing. All right, fine. I guess good job for by the Jets last night. I thought the Jets were stepping on the rake from either direction last night. And Mark, you'll get fired up about Twitter middle school, as you call it, quite often. And usually I don't, but you know, when you're a little closer to the situation, it's annoying, because last night basically it was coming from all directions. You had the bottomless Belichick conspiracies, which were really cute all week. Mark, I'm not coming after you, but about 7,000 people cooked up that same exact theory that Belichick was going to ruin the Jets season. So you had that going on. And so if the Jets win, Belichick gets the best of you and you laugh at them for ruining the tank for Trevor sweepstakes. If the Jets lose, everyone gets to laugh at them for their incompetence. And that's just where things are right now. And it makes football less fun for me. But I did enjoy that they actually were competitive in this game. And I take a positive out of that, just because I don't like watching the team get absolutely killed week after week. And with the Patriots, it's like, that wasn't the Patriots having a bad night. That wasn't
that's who they are.
Can you believe that the Patriots, you know, overlooked the Jets, that they had a trap game with the Ravens, and they almost looked, no, the Patriots aren't good. They are not a good team. And the fact that if the Jets were just competent in the fourth quarter with their with some decision making and play calling and maybe get one stop on defense, the Jets should have won that game going away. So yeah, the Patriots, I think, are still in deep trouble. But for the, to your point, Mark, like, I get it. And Jets fans are so starved and neglected after years of abuse that there's a vocal portion of the fan base. So that will just get after you and deride you as a fool for even entertaining the notion that you shouldn't root for your team to go 0-16. But I think life is too short for 0-16.
Right,
exactly. And just because you win one game in week 9 doesn't mean the Jets don't get Trevor Lawrence. And even if they get Trevor Lawrence, it doesn't mean the Jets are going to all of a sudden be a functional franchise. I just wanted to live in the moment, beat Belichick and have a nice night, but we don't get that.
Exactly. And it's against your rival team. And that's why, like, that was a good night to stay off Twitter. I was on it early on, and I was just like, I don't need this. I'll send a few out.
It was really good.
If I'm feeling inspired. But
everyone was very clever, I thought.
But then jump off. It does seem funny that, and I read this weekly column by Mike Sando on The Athletic, and there's always all these, like, theories of, like, why Belichick's doing this from, like, and this isn't fans, so I put it in a different category. It's from other coaches and GMs. Why is Belichick saying this? Are they tanking? Why is he making these? He's so in everyone's head that they can't just accept that the team's terrible. And you said, like, they saved their season. And I saw some stuff early on Twitter, like, you know, wow, this could really put the nail in the Patriots. I was like, people have not watched the Patriots since the Chiefs and Seahawks game, because it's not the offense. There's so much focus on Cam Newton and the running game. And the offense, look, they've doing the best they can, and I think they've done that for the most part the last couple of weeks and more or less a lot of the season. They're doing the best they can. I think they could be functional, but it's the 31st ranked defense in the league according to DVOA, and they're without they're without Stephon Gilmore, and maybe they're a little better when they get him back. He's a defensive player of the year, of course he'll help, but that's it. Lawrence Guy, like, okay, maybe you get him back, you're a little better. They're terrible. I mean, there's no way they're going to be able to survive, and it's a different sort of terrible. If you're the Jets, if you want to look at, like, the flip side and be positive, they have a left tackle. It's frustrating. Mekhi Becton keeps losing these games, and there's some Taka, it was about him struggling breathing. That's a concern. But you found him. You found Denzel Mims. Like, you have a couple young players on the team. Show me the young players on the Patriots front seven that they're finding. They played 22 guys last night, most of them like 10 to 15 snaps. They're just cycling through undrafted free agents looking for anyone to step up. And so even that part of the season's been a struggle for the Patriots.
I don't think Belichick's playing head games. The most honest statement he made is, we sold out all these years. We spent our money. We went and got Super Bowl trophies, which is a perfectly acceptable, like,
well, but doesn't explain why they've drafted poorly.
Well, they drafted poorly, but they also, but you don't come out of that 20-year journey saying, pointing at all the issues the Patriots have. They bottomed out right now to some degree. They have the fourth most cap space entering 2021. I think, you know, they're going to have a chance to rebuild. But Dan, I mean, don't forget, as a Browns fan, I've been through what you're going through. They were 1-31 over 2 years. And you want to talk about shots and jabs and humor and wit cracking directed at the Browns? It's been going on for 20 years.
Oh,
they've won
that
a playoff game since I was in since 1995. So I'm with you. I hear you, but you have to, you cannot come out of this without the number one prize. And so I think a Monday night win would have been nice, and 1-15 will get you there, but it's just not worth
maybe
it.
Jaguars have a very tough schedule.
I'm with you, Mark, and I'm not looking to do like a measuring stick of who has more pain or anything, but what I'm saying is,
I mean,
right,
you literally write that column, and I say that humorously, but
let's say, and I had the Browns ahead of the Jets, but let's say the Browns are 0-8 and it's week 9 and you're playing the Steelers.
That's a Dan Hansis shout out.
Thank you, Paul Rudd. And you're playing the Steelers and you have a chance to beat the Steelers. Are you one of the Browns fans saying, I want to lose this game and then lose 7 more and go 0-16?
When they went the 1-15 year. Do you remember that they were in a race with the Niners for the number 1 pick? And I was openly rooting for Cleveland to lose because there was no value or joy in those
teams.
But at
what point? But were you doing it in early November? In December is different, but at this point,
my thing is, look, I am a little different than you, and I think this sort of I see your dad in you when you want the Jets to prevail and win and beat the. That is not how I was said that. To beat the Patriots, I get it, but I think
Erica.
if you're Cleveland, you went so many years where you just had the third or fourth pick. You didn't get there with the number one pick, and they kept missing on quarterbacks. And if they're done with Sam Darnold, you cannot fall for anything other than getting Trevor Lawrence. I think Justin Fields looks interesting too. They're going to get one of those two guys, but this is a dance. This is a dance they're going to have to do real nimbly with the Darnold thing too. I mean, it's a bit of a drama, but if I'm Darnold, I want out of there, and Jets fans are in a tough place because it's not easy. It's not easy or organic to root for football. The life force goes out when you're having to root for your team to lose.
Life's too short. I don't buy that.
In my life.
Look, Greg, like life is too short. But you have no living idea of what Dan was going through.
Sure, as an adult, but during the most emotional time I ever was as a fan, like my favorite season was Dick McPherson going 6-10 because that was like the most fun they were for about a 7-year period. And that's when I was like more like living and dying and disappointed that the next day. All I mean is like the result of last night doesn't guarantee the pick. It's like Dan said, you just want to have, it's kind of like how I viewed that game as a Pats fan. Like on one sense, it's disarming to have such low stakes. Like to be a Patriots fan, like there felt like there was no stakes to that game, really. I even started thinking, you know, you start rationalizing. It was like, well, if you're ever going to lose to the Jets, like this is the season to do it. But it's still fun to just watch your team win. Like that's really all I'm looking for.
I have two, just like you, Mark. I have two young boys at home. It's a Monday night game, and it would have been nice to have them sitting on the couch and enjoy a Jets win. Like that, that's part for me, part of the fan experience. Even if like the smarter fans out there are telling me, and again, not a shot at you, but this is more what was out there telling me, you're an idiot for wanting your team to win because you're going to get Trevor Lawrence and win the Super Bowl once you have that set up. None of that's guaranteed. I've been following this team in the sport long enough that like nothing's promised. So I just wanted that win, but maybe it does. Maybe it is. Maybe this is the biggest moment in Jets history. It could be. Who knows?
The one last thing. I mean, there is another, you know, narrative here, and there's a lot of season left. Darnold comes back. These wide receivers are healthy. Darnold could play 4 or 5 really good games. They fall out of the mix, and that's not the worst situation either if you believe in Sam Darnold. I mean, I feel like the weird thing is you're pushing what was and could still be a franchise quarterback out the door. And it's like that's – you don't have nobody. You have Sam Darnold, who 4 months ago everyone was super excited about.
I think as a Patriots fan, I was watching that game and thinking – you know, they made the game plan for Darnold on some level. They did a good head fake making the Patriots think all these zero blitzes and Joe Flacco spinning it. And I'm thinking they would be better off with Darnold out there. I wouldn't have much faith in Darnold having a night that like that.
I mean, we knew Darnold wasn't playing on Friday. So
Saturday.
That would be weird if they were game planning for him still. But all good points. And I think you're right, Mark. With Perryman, Mims, and Crowder there, that's actually a pretty solid wide receiver group. And now that we've seen Flacco be able to move the ball, now Darnold, assuming comes back after the bye, healthy. Now you get, here, kid, 7 weeks, show us that you can deliver those type of games. And if you can't, we're moving on. So anyway, there you go. Good job, Greg. Congratulations on another Patriots win over the Jets. All right, before we get to Bo Wolf to talk the Eagles and Carson Wentz, let's look ahead to week 10 and a big matchup in the AFC South. Thursday night football opens with a really, really solid game here. Indianapolis Colts at Tennessee Titans, first place in the AFC South at stake in this one. Colts coming off, a loss to the Ravens where the offense did not look very good at all. The Titans defense got back on track against the Bears, but can you trust any judgment day on a defense when they're playing the Bears? I don't know. This is going to be a good game on a short week. Tough challenge for both teams in the middle of November. Mark, what are you thinking here?
Well, I think it's, you know, we always get into these strength on strength type scenarios, but I like the idea of the Colts defense versus a really tough Titans offense that's not quite been itself of late. And I kind of was trying to wonder what might have happened there a little bit. I do think that there's a little bit of a drop off since they lost Taylor Lewan. And I know that like Ty Sambrillo's come in there and done a pretty good job. Their line is fine, but you're playing a Colts defense that absolutely nullified the Ravens in the first half of that game. And really almost, you know, throughout until the Ravens came to life in the midway through this third quarter, but 55 yards at the half. I think with Darius Leonard in there, it's such a difference maker. They erase run games. So I want to see Titans, you know, Derrick Henry on the ground versus a Colts defense that basically says, we're going to, you know what we're going to do. We're going to take you away on the ground and then you have to survive through the air. And I mean, this is one of the better Thursday night games in a while because these two teams know each other so well too.
And is so important for this division. You know, neither of these teams I would expect to get a one seed, but it still is a big advantage to win your division, get a home game in the first round of the playoffs. Vrabel struggled, you know, with the Colts. He's 1-3 against them, lost to Jacoby Brissett at one point. I do remember there was like a Thursday night whitewash where Mariota got hurt and Andrew Luck just like creamed him. That feels like 5 years ago. That was not that long. It was less than 2 years ago, 2018. So I think the Colts match up really well, not just like because it's a coaching matchup, because it just feels like this is a team Rivers can do his thing against. A team that's not going to rush the passer that well, that he can move the ball slowly down the field. And you mentioned the Colts, you know, defense, their defensive line so deep. So if you haven't watched them a ton, they just have like six or seven guys that can make plays. Muhammad, Danico Autry, Buckner, Houston, they kind of come in waves. And this Titans offensive line, you said it, Mark, that's what struck me the last few weeks. They're not playing that well. They're really requiring Tannehill to play at a really high level. He is. He's definitely the better quarterback in this game, but I kind of think it sets up on both sides fairly well for the Colts. It's not a defense, I think, that's going to trouble Rivers nearly as much as most.
Yeah, I see the Colts as ultimately in the big picture pretenders when you're looking at who are the true AFC Super Bowl contenders. But at the same time, they're good enough and their defense is strong enough. And when Rivers gets time, he can still do things that they could beat teams like the Titans and lesser than type teams. So I think this is a good matchup for Indianapolis. And a lot of it goes back to the pass rush, because I think the teams with the good pass rushes are going to give the Colts hell. They don't run the ball too well and the quarterback can't move. And that's just asking a lot for this version of the Colts. So Vic Beasley out the door, obviously. They said, get out of here, take our money and leave. Jadeveon Clowney missed week 9. I think he's questionable for this game. They need him to get back and make an impact as a pass rusher. I like the Titans in this game because I think they're a better team ultimately, and they're home. So that's where I'm going with this game. I think this is a Titans win. And I think they take control, and I think they ultimately can win the division going away. But I'm giving the Colts more than a fighting chance here.
I would take the Titans too. I think that they were a PR disaster with the Corona business, but they were pretty resilient with how they handled that. The one thing you mentioned though with Vic Beasley, I think they would have been better served by a more successful offseason. The Vic Beasley thing happened. Clowney signing has not completely worked out for them. And I was looking at what's been going on with their first round pick, Isaiah Wilson, who they wanted to come in and be a part of that line, that he would have stepped in and helped with Taylor Lewan out. And I was reading an Athletic article where a source said he is a disaster. Someone, they called him lazy and useless. He's been Isaiah Wilson.
They played him last week. They started him last week. I don't think he made it through the whole game, though.
He's had two exposures to Corona.
Right.
He had a DUI in September, and he a couple weeks ago just missed practice 2 days in a row with a headache. And basically, Vrabel was like, I can't work with these guys who only practice on Fridays. So, I mean, that's been a hit and miss so far.
Right. That's one of those things. If he was on like a major team in a major market, like that would be a huge story. But Tennessee is like the place where you can be a first round pick and have like a nightmare and no one pays attention. I want to see the Colts get Nyheim Hines the ball a little bit more. I've seen enough of Jonathan Taylor. I mean, Hines has juice. If you need to run it up the middle, put Jordan Wilkins in. They're just a better offense when they have a little more Nyheim Hines. T.Y. Hilton looks like he will return for this game, which does help them out.
And we before we bring on one of Philadelphia's shining suns, Bo Wolf, actually don't know if Bo's from Philadelphia. Colleen is, and I would like to see her. You know what? Might be the last time we get it. Let's get Philip Rivers with the bolo tie for the post-game show. I think the Titans will win, but I'd be very cool with seeing Rivers mixing it up with the TNF crew and Connie. And yes, now, without further ado, first thing we're going to figure out where the hell Bo's from. I don't know. I took a guess there. It's not, I mean, I live in Los Angeles and I've worked for the NFL. I'm not from here. What an assumption. Let's welcome Bo Wolf to the show from The Athletic, who covers the Eagles and the NFL. There he is. Bo, first of all, you know what? I can almost tell by your background that you are from Philadelphia. Yes or no?
No, actually. And I would like to tell you that this background is the result of me not having a chance to scramble after, cleaning up spit up from my 9-day-old before the show started.
Oh,
this is just our birds with friends background. Thank you.
Oh, wow.
The truth is, Dan, I'm from Westchester, and once upon a time we shared pages in the Journal News.
Whoa!
Look at this.
How about that?
So there you go. I think I sent this to Greg a couple of years ago. I was researching a story on an old high school nemesis, and there it was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Dan Hansis painting the picture of some pitcher on the other side of the county. His actions during the game or something like that.
It was very heated. I covered more on the Rockland County side, which was on the other side of the Tappan Zee Bridge. Rest in peace. I covered the Rockland County baseball beat. Ian Rappaport covered the Westchester County beat, and we would meet up at the sectionals up north and get into some good times. But Bo is a Westchester dude. All right, that's been learned. But what we really want to talk about, Bo, here is the Eagles, and more specifically, and I brought this up with the guys last week, I'm a Carson Wentz fan. I've always liked his game, and obviously in 2017, he damn near won the MVP before he blew out his knee. And now we're here at a crossroads in his career. So I want to talk about that. And I know your colleague, Sheil Kapadia. Damn, I knew I was going to get that wrong. When he wrote a piece that went up today about Wentz's decline with a whole bunch of metrics digging into the whole thing. Where do you come down on this? What has happened to Wentz? And can he be fixed before the season is through?
Well, I think that's the question, you know, the Eagles have to answer. And there's no doubt about it. You know, if you read that story by Sheil, which everybody who's interested should, the decline has been very real and precipitous since 2017. You know, this year he is arguably the worst full-time starting quarterback in the NFL. He has been, it's hard to say that, but it's true. I mean, you watch that game. He was barely outplaying Ben DiNucci a couple of weeks ago. So, Benny DiNucci, as we call him. He has had fumbling issues since the beginning of his career. And that is a thing that he has been asked to work on and really has never fixed it. And that has continued to rear its ugly head. But the interceptions, is a thing that he has been pretty low in interception rate in the past, but there was reason to believe coming into this season, that was going to regress, and it has regressed in a big way. He has given away the ball more than any other quarterback, but he's also not really, you know, creating the big plays when he's not turning the ball over. He's taking sacks. He's been inaccurate. And, you know, it's one of those things where you have to try to find out how much is Wentz, how much is the supporting cast, how much is the team they've put around him. Everybody certainly shares a part of it, but, you know, when you draft a quarterback in the second round and your starting quarterback is playing this badly, it's the recipe for, you know, a lot of discussion.
Yeah, I was taken in that article, you know, how little excuse making Sheil made because the injuries have been there, but, you know, the performance has come down, but the injuries have been kind of a constant. So the part that that gets me is he less athletic than he used to be? And because that's important, like, and I think watching him, it you sort of forget what he looked like in 2017, how he would evade the rush. He's still athletic, but maybe not like the sudden sort of pocket movements and everything. Not as accurate. I've always thought he wasn't that accurate, but just like the numbers say he's not as accurate. Now I'm thinking, though, I didn't know you only had a kid 9 days ago, Bo. Congrats.
Thank you, by
the way. So did we make, you know, you do Birds with Friends, a podcast about the Eagles with Sheil.
Right. And Zach Berman.
He drops a big hammer, you know, a lead story on The Athletic today. You just had a kid. Did we make a mistake having you on the show?
Well, no, but I'm sure that we are going to talk about this on Birds with Friends, and he's going to have a lot to say. So, yeah, he's been itching to come on, I'm sure.
Your response to me when I asked you on the show was really funny to me. You just thought you were surprised that we didn't have better things to talk about.
I said this on our last episode. You know, it's day two with the newborn. We're in the hospital and they're telling us, you know, this is going to be a tough night. The baby is still thinking it's in the womb and now it's just figuring out it's not. So it's going to be up all night. She's going to be up all night, and it's Sunday night football, the Cowboys. And by the time the Eagles have their second ridiculous turnover, she's fast asleep. They put her to sleep. So that's how boring the singles team has been.
Oof. But my response was, I always overrate the Eagles and I always have high hopes for them. And you said, well, they've overrated them too. I kind of want you to unpack that, because I think there is something to that, that the Eagles always think, and I think, and some of the people covering the team always think they're like this juggernaut roster waiting to come. And the reality is they're 500 with Wentz since the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of endemic of, you know, what got them to the Super Bowl, and that was pushing chips in, and that is Howie Roseman's MO. He does it, you know, every year. He does it at the trade deadline. He does it in the offseason. But this time has sort of always been coming with the way this roster has been built. They keep extending the older players. You know, you look at the offensive line, they've got these four offensive linemen locked up over the age of 30. You know, it's, you can't really say it's bad luck that so they've suffered so many injuries there. And they entered this offseason coming off two straight years of having a pretty mediocre offense and a defense that was injured a lot, but Jim Schwartz was able to sort of, you know, make them mediocre, middle of the road. And what they did this offseason was they decided, we're going to leave the offense as is. We're going to, you know, use our big resources to sign Javon Hargrave to, you know, $14 million deal and trade and sign Darius Slay. And they did nothing veteran-wise on the offensive side of the ball. All they did was draft Jalen Reagor in the first round, draft a backup quarterback in the second, and a linebacker in the third who hasn't even been able to get on the field. And guess what? Like, the offense has not been much better. It's obviously been much worse. They sort of had found gold in Travis Fulgham, who's been, you know, the one or two bright spots of the season. And the defense, they're not getting what they paid for. I mean, Javon Hargrave has been bad, and Darius Slay has been great. And guess what? The defense has gone from 12th in DVOA to 14th in DVOA. So it has not made a big difference. And, you know, they have this core that they have tried to keep together. And it was always going to come to a point where those guys were going to start declining. And right now, you know, they've got an old, mediocre, expensive roster. And next year, they do not have a lot of cap flexibility. So, you know, thank God for the NFC East. But, you know, big picture, league-wide, they're not in good shape.
And I'm left with questions. You know, there's been changes with the coaching staff, and it was chic to label the departure of Frank Reich as a huge loss for Wentz. But I see a player that, you know, we see him declining under pressure. The floor for Carson Wentz seems to be changing. And I don't see a quarterback and a head coach or a quarterback in a scheme that trust each other right now. It just seems to me that 2017 almost appears as a mirage to some degree, and that the real Carson Wentz, you know, every quarterback's dealing with injuries to some degree. And I saw that the Eagles line in that article is still essentially eighth, top 10 in pass protection win rate. And so it's not just, you know, the broken pieces around him. Do you see Carson Wentz with a lack of trust in the environment and maybe the coaching staff? Because when you asked Doug Peterson about Carson Wentz a couple weeks ago, he seemed also baffled. So it feels very murky.
I think there is definitely something to that. And you talk about, you know, first of all, the offensive line. This is going to be this game, probably their eighth different starting offensive line in nine games, which is insane. But Jeff Stoutland has held them up to be sort of a top 10 offensive line performance wise. And I think to Greg's point before, it's not just the athleticism. It's the pocket awareness and, you know, the pocket comfortability that has really seemed to dissipate. Even as a rookie, he seemed comfortable in the pocket to maneuver away from things. And now, you know, he's sort of fleeing at the first sign of trouble when there are opportunities for him to step up in the pocket. And, you know, to the point of all these voices in his head, this offense, you know, they didn't add people to the roster on offense this offseason, but they added a lot of coaches. They added Rich Scangarello, who had worked with Kyle Shanahan. Gangs. They brought back Marty Morningweg. And, you know, it's sort of a question, you know, who is the person in Carson Wentz's ear? Is it Doug Peterson? Is it Morningweg? Is it Scangarello? Is it Press Taylor, who's, you know, the passing game coordinator and also the quarterback's coach? He's getting all these different pieces of advice, and it does not seem that he is getting better in any appreciable way. He's, you know, he is declining.
All right. Before we let you go, Bo, two quick questions. Number one, what is the Eagles' final record by New Year's Day?
I'm going to say they win the division at 6-9-1. So you've got, you know, a city that has celebrated a championship a couple years ago and was celebrating, you know, saving democracy this weekend is not going to be greasing down the polls for 6-9-1.
And okay, there you go. So that's history. And speaking of history and democracy, I saw on Twitter that you did visit. You made the pilgrimage to Four Seasons Total Landscaping, and I believe the North End of Philadelphia. Your takeaways.
I gotta tell you, this was Sunday, and my other son, or my only son, my older child, you know, he's only napping in the car right now. So I decided him and I would take a little drive up to Northeast Philly. And it's the pictures don't even do it justice. I mean, it is just a barren wasteland of an area right next to the sex shop and across the street from the crematorium. And there were every now and then a couple people, you know, pulling out front to take their selfies in front. So, you know,
did you visit either of those
Philadelphia landmark?
Did you visit either of those two auxiliary places of business while you were there?
I did not, because Casey had just fallen asleep in the car. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's illegal, at least for one of them. All right. Bo Wolf, follow him on Twitter, Bo_Wolf. And congratulations on the addition to the family. We all know the feeling, and there's not a better one in the world.
Thank you guys very much. First time, long time. So happy to be here.
Beautiful, Bo. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Bo.
There he goes. Bo Wolf from Westchester County, New York. Wow. It's good when the lower Hudson Valley represents in a national sense.
Were you there goosebumps at the same time? Like you were,
you know,
like
what? I didn't want to fall too far down the lower Hudson Valley wormhole. I'm going to connect with Bo off air to find out if we were together.
It's like a Woodward and Bernstein's crossing in the night. I mean, you could have, who knows what you could have accomplished together as a duo.
What's up, Ricky? You got a smile.
You said one of them's illegal. Are you saying a sex shop is illegal or going to a crematorium?
Bringing a child into
I don't think you could take a child inside a sex shop.
But if they're 9 days old?
No.
Why would you do that, child?
The older boy. But either way,
I don't know. I feel like they do curbside pickup.
Erica's like, if the child is younger than 2 weeks old, you could take them anywhere in the world, and it's not
isn't that how it works?
I take my kids to the crematorium all the time. It's just kind of gives you an appreciation of life. It's not going to last forever. Man. Enjoy it right now.
Circle of life, bro. All right, before we go, I put out a call on Twitter for the mailbag. I'd like to check in with all those listeners that we love. We just had, as we talked about at the top of the Sunday show, Mark, what a reminder of how lucky we are with the hashtag Godzilla phenomenon, where we asked the listeners deep into our Thursday recap podcast of Packers Niners to send us a nod if you made it to the end of the 15 minutes. Tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of replies.
Millions.
Still getting them. Millions even. So what better way to thank the fans than involving them and including them in today's show? So I'm going to go through a few questions before we say goodbye. Here we go. Starting right here from three naive algorithms in a trench coat. Katie at _tripod. Optimistic Miami fan here. Looking at the last few games for the first time in eons, it feels like we don't have any substantial holes in the team outside of running back. I actually think we might be able to draft the strongest player available with every pick in 2021. Do you guys agree? Remember that in addition to all the sunny optimism around the Dolphins right now, they also have the first and second round picks of the Texans, who are one of the worst teams in the league this season. What do you think, Greg?
The framing of the question I have a problem with, that they have no major holes so they can draft wherever they want. I mean, I love the way the Dolphins are coached, and so far in a tiny sample size, I love their quarterback. That's like the most two important things you can have. I would not put them in the top 20 most talented teams in the NFL. I think they could use help almost everywhere, except for maybe the secondary. They still need to be adding more like blue chip players. I think Flores has shown, though, like if you get some good players, he'll know what to do with them and have them cohesive.
I'll give you a little bit of optimism. We were just asked to make our midseason picks for NFL.com, a huge event in our lives and the lives of readers. But I picked Miami to go to the Super Bowl in a rematch with Arizona. Total chaos. And I'm telling you something, this Miami team reminds me of the 2001 Patriots.
Yes,
they were 4-4 after 8 games. They're coached in a similar way. You got a lot of guys that were no-namers 6 months ago contributing. So listen, Super Bowl is rich, but I really like the way the team is composed. I think that their future is so bright. I didn't think that this would even happen this year. Chris Greer clearly planned for what's going to happen next year with all the picks. So there is, I mean, we know, you know, Handsome Hank is a Dolphins fan. My brother is a Dolphins fan. They've had nothing to cheer for so long. this is legit nice hope moment. Being planted right yeah. now. It is a different type of situation.
It's a problem for the Patriots that Flores is in this division. I really do think so. I think the point one of the analysts made last night that like Flacco was ready because the, you know, the Dolphins basically wanted to do the same thing that the Patriots want to do like 2 weeks before, but they're better at it. Like that's a problem for the Patriots. Like they are the most Patriots looking team of any of the Patriots yep. acolytes that I've seen, good and bad.
And Mark, we've been working for this company for 10 or 11 years now, and you get it. You get how the metrics works. You get how headline writing works. If you go out on a limb in one of those prediction articles and say, Dolphins to the Super Bowl, Mark Sessler's getting the pop on the social media handle. He might even get the headline. Good work.
There's no bigger pop than, you know, putting something on NFL.com in this industry right now. I mean, it just, it's going to seal the future. Listen, I picked Dallas in August. That looks like a trash bag pick. So it's like, why not get a little
the Browns last year, right? Right.
You can't always go chalk with this stuff.
I hate these mid-season ones. It feels...
I sat it out, personally.
Yeah, I try to keep everything the same unless it's totally impossible because it just feels like it's like, what happened? Am I right still with my original pick if it, and, you know, if I change it? No.
Hey, I got the Steelers winning the Super Bowl over the Saints, so I'm riding with
that. Looking good.
Why should I change it?
What, Adam Rank and I responded to this and no one else?
I did it.
Below you guys? Come on.
Derek Carr, David Carr, rather, did respond, and I did want to point out 28 people voted. Who's going to win the MVP? 14 predicted Russell Wilson. 13 predicted Patrick Mahomes, including me. No one predicted Aaron Rodgers, which, you know, it's crazy because I think he might be my pick right now. One person picked Derek Carr as the MVP. That was David Carr, his brother.
There you go. If Kevin Hanzus, my brother, was in the NFL, I'd do the same thing, all right? Josh Alstrom writes, Dear Dan, if the Broncos traded for Sam Darnold as a backup, he says, and he became a stud, how would that make you feel? I know you're a notorious Broncos hater. I am not a Broncos hater. I like to give it to John Elway a little bit because that guy's been on top of the world his whole life, and somebody's got to take him down a peg. But yes, it would be very wise for a team to invest in Sam Darnold to give him a shot, including the Broncos, who, like we said, entering this year, need more options than just Drew Luck. Drew Luck. Robert Rich writes, Mark mentioned that the first football card he ever owned was a Richard Todd. That's another former Jet. As a football card junkie, I'm intrigued. What years/brands of football cards did/does he collect? Did he experience the joys of Pro Set 89-93? I was in on Pro Set.
Oh, Pro Set? I made a huge mistake in my 20s because I had collected the entire first year of Pro Set. Now, Pro Set got really hot and it kind of brought football cards back into the zeitgeist a bit. And because here's what they do. They had announcer cards. I had a Bob Costas Pro Set card in my wallet for like all 4 years of high school.
Oh my God.
But they kept reissuing like new segments of the collection. It was like suddenly it's like 18 stadium cards. And so like I had a thick binder. I finally got the entire first year, not the second, but the first year. And then for some reason, met these two kids at a wedding, in my 20s, these young boys, and they love football. And I decided to give them the entire binder. I drove to their house the next day and gave a wet. Well, no, I am saying it was a hideously dumb move because I didn't conceive the fact that I could have given them to my own children, like down the road. So a very dumb move.
The card I would really love is the 2012 Topps edition of Bob Costas from the Olympics when he had pink eye. That's the card that I've always wanted and coveted.
Did you ever break out your card like during a date in high school? Just like show the girl, hey, I want to show you my beaten up Bob Costas trading card in my wallet.
If I were going on a lot of dates in high school, I probably wouldn't have been worried about that to begin with. I mean, it's, you know, no.
You know, this isn't going to happen for another 10 years or so, but one day this guy's going to soapbox about gun control during halftime of a football game.
You know what? The two of you, that you lack the key ingredient of soul within you. If you feel this way about a broadcaster who you guys are going to get old too. And there's going to be viewers that know the 58 or 60 year old version of you guys. They won't remember the youthful zeal, packed, you know, joyful, humorous young versions.
when we get that age, this podcast is going to be terrible. Moving on. All right. And if you're an older listener, that doesn't mean everyone is bad when they get late in their 50s and 60s. It was just Bob Costas. All right. Nick Blitchington, taking the QBs out of the conversation, who has been your favorite rookie to watch this season? Greg?
I hate these open-ended questions are tough off the top of my head. Justin Jefferson is the one that comes to mind quickly. I really think if he was on another team that was winning games, people, you know, statistically, he's having one of the best seasons a rookie's ever had. And he just looks like he is a number one receiver as a rookie. You do not see that too often.
Mark?
I mean, I think it's a weird year because he comes to mind, but very few others do. I do like the fact that I ticketed Patrick Queen for defensive rookie of the year, and he's in the race.
There's no dominant defensive rookie.
There really isn't.
Many good options. A lot of offensive players, a ton of receivers are doing well.
But we're getting one of the great rookie quarterback classes of all time, so I don't really care.
Mekhi Becton's my pick for obvious reasons. It's just fun hitting on the left tackle and then seeing him bully star players. Hopefully he can stay healthy.
He
up next.
Massive. You could fit all three of us inside of him.
Andrew Lewis asks, have any of the heroes picked up any new hobbies during COVID times? Mark?
No, they've been reduced. I probably am reading more, but that's not a new hobby. It's just something I stopped doing. But I haven't picked up salsa dancing or hey, let's have a really cool husband and wife hobby to do together while the kids are, awake 14, 15 hours a day screaming. No.
Greg.
Like our weekly, I do a weekly sort of beach, date with, my kids. And sometimes we meet up with a friend. That's about it. I don't know if I've added a hobby, but that includes Walker, my son's obsession, which is we role play football games where he wants to be all time cornerback and just break up passes and tackle, which I appreciate.
That's good.
And, he concocts various scenarios, his first down, third down, keeps the score. He always has to win, but that's my hobby. Do that an hour or two a week.
I taped the Power Ranking show with Money on Tuesday mornings, and Matt Money Smith, who's a renaissance man and really seems to be successful in anything he sets his mind to, recently, and I guess the last few years, picked up surfing, and he's out there every morning, and he's got the wetsuit, and it doesn't matter. It was 45 degrees today. This morning,
wow.
He's out there in the water, and he's telling me how it's the only place, the way surfers are. It's the only place where the world really makes sense and all that stuff. And he's saying he takes his kids out there, and they have amazing bonding moments. And I was really jealous because I don't think that's ever going to be my thing. But I also was thinking, I'm 40, and, I don't think I should be playing Madden and MVP baseball on the PS4 for the rest of my life. I probably have hit the moment in my life where it's time to pick up something new. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to make that a New Year's resolution to figure out a hobby that will take me into deep.
Maybe we can get some. Maybe we can get some suggestions from the listeners. What should be Dan's hobby?
Not a bad
another
idea.
Solid. I will say real quick that I forgot about this. Matt Money Smith actually does figure into a hobby for me. And I mentioned it to him once before, but I drive Luke to a little friend's where he does remote schooling with every day. It's just like a 30-minute drive. We listen to Matt Money and Petros every single day coming back, and we listen to Talk Sports Radio on the way up, and he has lots of questions. So I stopped listening to Talk Sports Radio because I was never driving. It's been delightful.
Your hobby, driving. You're not into driving. Eating or driving.
There you go.
Driving, listening to Petros and Money, please.
Rakesh Pradhan asks, what brand new rules should be added to the game and be retained forever? I chose this one from Rakesh because I feel very strongly about this. It happened again on Monday night on a hit from Ashton Davis on Cam Newton that resulted in a personal foul. I am all for as much player protection as you could build into the rule book without really destroying the game. But if you're going to do that and you're going to have these guys on the field, the officials, track the game at the speed it's being played, and you're going to be throwing flags for 15 yards that can completely reset a drive or even a game, why don't we add an eye in the sky element and allow the opposing coaches to challenge these late hits, whether it's shot down the middle on a wide receiver being popped by a safety or even a safety or a pass rusher coming off the edge and hitting a quarterback.
I'm fine with that. I also think, why isn't delay a game challengeable? the Texans got a 70-yard touchdown. They snapped it 3 seconds after the clock. That should be able to review that too. We've got some breaking news though, Dan.
Uh-oh.
What do you got? This is a legitimate bit of breaking news. The NFL has unanimously approved playoff expansion to 16 teams if COVID-19 eliminates meaningful games. This has been reported pretty widely for a week now that this might be coming, but now the NFL is officially doing it, which means we can officially talk about it. I don't love it just because I'm worried about whether this could be something that happens in the future. It would be 16 teams. But this is a crazy year, and this is just a way to, I suppose, make back some money, frankly, if COVID-19 knocks out some regular season games for some teams, which feels increasingly possible. 56 players or personnel tested positive for COVID last week in the NFL. The previous high for a week was 26. So the high doubled. And so, you know, they're coming up with some plans. So it'd be a 16-team tournament. It would really bang the one seeds.
Well, and speaking of talk radio, I heard Dan Patrick say that an NFL source told him that that this is what they want to do for good.
That's what I'm worried about.
Right, but the vision would be 16 teams, not just this year, but if this goes well, and this would be kind of a test case with how it's perceived. But it also, I believe, includes not just division winners, 1 through 4. If I want to go read this again, but I thought there was talk of it being seeded by winning percentage, which means the Eagles would not host a playoff game if that's the way this rule would be enacted this time around.
I'm looking at it right now. The conference standings, if we did go 1 versus 8, it would be Steelers against the Browns in the opening round. In the NFC, it would be Saints versus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, Saints versus Niners. Would be the 1-8 matchup there. You know what? The NFL needs to build in these protections, speaking of protections. And then I think they should take it a step further and put everybody in a bubble as soon as this regular season ends. I don't know if that's going to happen. Doesn't sound like it is, but they need to cover their asses here, to be frank.
I hate the 16 teams. We don't need to see the...
No, we don't.
We don't. I didn't like the... I don't need to see the 13th and 14th team either. That ship has sailed. Those teams are never teams I'm like, need to see them for another week. 12 was perfect. 16 to me is, I hate it.
Well, it's teams that have not done
with it this year, but I hate it after this year.
To make the playoffs, you want people to see you as a playoff team, and you're going to be inviting in teams that did not get the job done. And I think it's a problem. If it's a 1 year thing, that's cool. But like, expanding playoffs in the NFL is a terrible idea, in my opinion, because you're going to already get one or two teams in there that we all laugh at. That's not a good product.
All right, there you go. That was some good breaking news, Greg. Sometimes you've been a little hot and cold over the years with your breaking news, but it looks like you might be turning a corner.
That affirmation is like better than any Patriots win, you know. It's great.
All right, good stuff. Good show. Thank you to everybody that sent in mailbag questions. Next time you hear from us, it will be, I believe, a Sessler Rosenthal joint, right? Thursday night football this week. Who's on the Thursday night game this week?
I mean, I know I am. We'll talk after the show.
Yeah,
right. We'll figure it out.
All right. Okay. There you go. It'll be Greg, most likely, and a mystery guest recapping the Titans Colts game we just previewed. And then, yes, we have our NFL Network show. That airs on Saturday morning with additional re-airs. And then, yes, Sunday night, the flagship program returns, hopefully with Chris Wessel. All right. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the old boss, Rick Hollywood, behind the virtual glass. Until Thursday.